Blog Talk Radio.
It's amazing, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening. I'm exhausted, barely breathing, holding on to what I believe in. No matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing. I'm a monster, I'm a killer, I know I'm wrong, yeah. I'm a problem that I never, ever be solved. And no matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing.
And a very good evening, and thank you for joining us. Excuse me. This is the Knicks at Night Show, presented by Knicks Nation and Knicks Follow Train. I'm all by myself tonight. This is Frank Nutt. Tom Baffa can't be with me tonight, and my call screener, Tyler, is also unavailable this evening. So it's just me, talking some Knicks basketball here on the Knicks at Night Show. We come at you live every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here over the airwaves, except for any Tuesday the Knicks play, or Tom and I don't feel like having a show, or a high school game, or any other reason that Tom and I can come up with. But tonight you got us a little bit earlier, 8 p.m., trying to do something because of all this snow that we've got, jokingly. But anyway, so this is the Knicks at Night Show, presented by Knicks Nation. Knicks Nation is a Knicks everything Twitter account informing fans on everything New York Knicks basketball. Follow Knicks Nation on Twitter at Knicks Nation, and on Instagram at Knicks Nation, no space. This podcast will be available for download immediately following tonight's show on Stitcher and iTunes. Follow all of us on Twitter at Frank Nutt and at Tom Baffa for your latest news regarding our upcoming shows. If you're a diehard Knicks fan, check out hashtag Knicks Follow Train to network with other hardcore Knicks fans. So since the Knicks trip across the Atlantic Ocean, coming back towards New York, the Knicks are 3-1. And is that good? Is that bad? I'm not sure. But one thing I can tell you is that this season as a whole has been disappointing. Yes, it has. And I got a chance to go to a game on Friday to see the Knicks play the Orlando Magic. And although in the back of my mind I knew that a Knicks loss would help secure that one spot, or secure at least the number four spot, which is something I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight. You know, deep down I wanted them to win, because going into Madison Square Garden is unlike anything. I've been to other arenas, and it doesn't have the same feel. And MSG being what it is, and the mecca of basketball, not having a championship since 1973, it's definitely something that's in the back of your mind. And every time I walk into that building, I want the Knicks to win, regardless of draft picks or anything like that. But the Knicks did get a win on Friday. It was nice to see. Some of the young guys played really well. That's really good to see. And I'm upset, but I'm optimistic, because I feel there's a lot of places this Knicks team can go. And we're going to talk about some of those tonight. Like always, we'll be taking your calls, 347-637-3680. The Knicks are at the midway point of their season, and the playoffs are certainly out of the picture. Now we'll start to look at draft possibilities. So joining me tonight will be Mark Berman of the New York Post and Sam Massini, writer for CBS Sports College Basketball. He covers all things NBA draft, NCAA hoops, and the NBA for CBS. 347-637-3680. That's 3680. That's the number to get in touch with me. No Tom, no Tyler, just me tonight. Some Knicks fans, give me a call. Love to talk some Knicks basketball, whether you want to talk Langston Galloway getting signed for the rest of the season, Melo and Amari's inconsistent minutes, Lance Thomas, Lou Anson, new additions playing well, Pablo Prigioni, the possibility of him getting traded now with some point guards around the league going down, and can the Knicks move Jose Calderon, I think are some of the big topics right now. I'm going to take a short break. I'm going to get Sam on the phone, We're going to talk to Sam about some college basketball. So let's get some music going. I'll be right back. And we are back. This is the Knicks at Night Show. I'm Frank Nutt, your host. Joining me right now, Sam Vecini. He is a writer for CBS Sports College Basketball. He covers all things college basketball, the NBA draft, and the NBA. Sam, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good. What's going on, Frank?
Not too much. Sitting here in New York, I know you're in a much nicer place out in LA, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, definitely. It's been pretty sunny all day. It rained a little bit this morning, but after like 11 o'clock, I would say it got really nice out. So sat out on my balcony a little bit and relaxed.
Oh, that sounds a little bit different than my day. I got up this morning, shoveled snow, which I'm happy though, because we were supposed to have a blizzard, but where I live, we only got about 7 inches, which is nice. They predicted anywhere from 2 feet to 3 feet. So I was ecstatic this morning when I looked outside. But yeah, and then I spent the rest of the day inside because it was cold. So anyway, let's talk some NCAA hoops. This is my favorite time of the year. I love when the regular season starts picking up in college basketball. We start to get towards conference play, conference championships, NCAA tournament. It's my favorite time. I played college basketball at the D3 level for 4 years. So I love college basketball. I love the game. And I want to know, leading up to this time of the year, what are some of your top storylines that you've been looking at right now in college basketball?
Just generally in college basketball, the top storyline is Kentucky, whether or not they're going to go undefeated. And they have a realistic shot, too. I have 5 guys in my top 30 on my NBA draft prospect board. I have 7, I think, in the top 45. And they're all in the top 90, all 10 of their guys are in top 95, because I think Andrew Harrison's about like 92nd or 93rd on my board. But yeah, I have them all in my top 100 at the very worst. And anytime you've got 10 guys that have a realistic shot to get drafted and 5 of them in the first round, maybe even more than that by the end of their run to Kentucky, you've got one decent team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it helps, too, because the SEC is a little bit down this year, so that can definitely help them. You know, some of those teams that would normally give them a little bit of a push, maybe not as strong as they have been in the past. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that Kentucky may be able to run the table this year?
Well, it's certainly going to be easier for them than it is for Virginia, who's also still undefeated. Virginia has Duke this week. They have upcoming matchups with Louisville and North Carolina. It's obviously a little bit easier playing a down Florida team, an okay LSU team, an okay Georgia team. And Arkansas is like a pretty decent borderline top 25 team, but that's all we're talking about in the SEC at this point. And Georgia's decent too, but I mean, that's what you're talking about in the SEC at this point. You're not talking about having to run the gauntlet of North Carolina, Duke, Louisville, even having to go to like some sneakier tough venues, like even if Syracuse is down, you don't have to go into the Carrier Dome and play.
Right.
So that definitely makes it easier, but I don't know that they're going to make it happen yet. I think that I would probably still lean towards no, given that we've just seen some, really, I think it's just like a mental letdown in some games for them where, you know, they don't really come out all pistons firing, and they just kind of come out sleep blocking, and teams have taken them to overtime now twice.
Right.
Texas A&M and Ole Miss. So I don't really think that it's, I don't know whether or not it's going to happen. I would probably lean towards no still, but it's getting closer and closer. So that'll be the best thing to track at this point.
Oh, sure. So now besides Kentucky, some of the top teams that you mentioned, Virginia, I'll throw Duke in there. Do you think some of these teams other than Kentucky have a chance to, you know, I guess I would want to say which of those top teams right now do you see making deep runs into the NCAA tournament besides Kentucky?
I would go right to number two. I think that people are sleeping on Virginia a little bit. I think that, you know, they get a little bit underrated because they're defense oriented. They have a really, really slow pace. They actually have the second slowest tempo out of 351 teams in the NCAA this year, which, you know, makes people not necessarily want to tune in. But they're still just like an efficiency buzzsaw. It's almost impossible to get penetration against them when they're on defense. And they have a bunch of really good shooters in Malcolm Brogdon and Justin Anderson, and they have some tough interior guys and Mike Toby, Anthony Gill. It's just a really, really sound, all-around, really well-developed team that I really think that they are the second contender. Duke is certainly up there as well. They have some warts, obviously, with their defense. Their perimeter defense is kind of a mess right now. But they'll get together, I think, and then you've got Wisconsin, Arizona, Gonzaga, teams like that kind of laying in the weeds and, you know, just kind of waiting for their turn once the NCAA tournament comes up. So it's going to be an interesting tournament this year for sure, but there's not really another way to say it. Kentucky's a clear favorite still.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I have a little soft spot for Virginia. Toby, actually, he lives maybe, you know, 10 minutes away from me where I live, and he played for the AAU program that I played for and that I currently coach for now. So we have a soft spot for Virginia. I like to see them do well. I think it's going to be difficult for them to get through that gauntlet of the ACC, you know, going on the road, on Tobacco Road, having to beat some of those teams, some of the Dukes, even a North Carolina team that's, you know, you still have to go to UNC and win.
UNC is a top 15 team this year. They've won
six or seven
in a row. Like, they're legitimately really good.
Right, and that's not an easy out where Kentucky may have some easier games down the stretch. But so, like we were talking about, with the SEC down, Kentucky's having a Calipari-type year with all the recruits that he brought in. What do you think of their depth and their subbing ability? You know, I know they don't do it as much anymore, but the five-in, five-out, you have a kid like Towns who's, you know, playing 19 minutes a game. Do you think they can sustain that and continue to play that way, or do you think at some point – some of these players are going to have to get more minutes?
I think that what's happening now is they've gone away from the platoon, basically.
Right.
When Alex Poitras went down with his ACL injury, that's when it really started, where they were going away from it and really going more towards not a regular substitution system. They started substituting a little bit more like a normal team does. The thing is, it's not really the big men, though, because all of their big men are pretty interchangeable. It's the guards where I think we're going to start to see a little bit of a divergence in what happens, because it's pretty clear at this point that Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis are their two best guards.
Yeah.
There's not really a way around it. The Harrison twins are fine. They're not terrible. I have no problem with them starting still, because you shouldn't try and fix what isn't broken. But it's pretty clear at this point that their best chance to win down the stretch to me is playing Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis, you know, 25 minutes a game, maybe get them up around there. And you're starting to see it a little bit more with Booker, because Booker's just been on fire. He's been spectacular.
He's
shooting something
like 67%
really three since he sat out that Columbia game with sickness. So I think that's more where you're going to see it. The big men, though, Towns has been very good. He's not really asked to do what I think his potential skill set is. He's asked to do a lot more post-ups than he is, like to run in the pick and roll off of, or just try and dive to the rim off of the pick and roll, or just to pop to the, you know, 18-foot range because he has that jumper in his skill set. I wish they would do more of that with him, but they don't. So if they're just going to run these guys as post-up players other than Wiles, I think that they might as well just keep using them the way that they're using them and keep them fresh throughout the game.
Right. And so now this is the Knicks at Night show. We talk a lot of NBA, but mostly Knicks basketball. So you can kind of see where my interest in college basketball has grown this year with the Knicks actually having a pick and, you know, getting a chance to not – you know, not have to draft someone in the 15 to 25 range, where now we actually have a pick that's probably going to be top five somewhere. Okafor, Towns, Russell, some of the guys that I've been looking at. Your thoughts on those three guys? Are they the top three guys in your estimation? Where do you see these guys falling kind of in your rankings?
I have them Okafor first, Towns second, Emmanuel Mudiay, who's in China,
right,
third,
China, yep.
Stanley Johnson from Arizona, fourth, and then Russell, fifth. Russell's the one that's climbing with a bullet right now, though, because
right.
He's just been incredible. His offensive sense is off the charts. It's like watching – I compared him to a little bit of a Darren Williams when Williams was at Illinois. It's
yep.
What my thought process has been, just the way that he passes, the way he sees the floor, the way he has that quick-release three-point shot. Some have also said – James Harden with, I think,
yes.
That's more of the fact that they're both left-handed and they're both
right.
Lead guards. I think he compares a little bit more to Darren Williams personally. I think he's going to be more of a point guard on the next level. But, I mean, all five of those guys in my mind are potential all-stars. You're getting with Stanley Johnson, for instance, you're getting a two-way great offensive player who's already shooting 42% from three and can already slash the bucket against anyone and already has an NBA-level body at 6'8", like 240 pounds as a small forward. Mudiay is a really good player that runs really well in the pick and roll. Anytime you get a point guard that's adept at the ball screen like he is with his athleticism as well, and he has the ability to kind of shield the defender on his back and keep him away and always find that right little pocket pass or even pull up from like that 15-foot range or go all the way to the rim. He's just a really, really smart, really, really athletic player when he's put in that situation. And then Towns, we kind of already talked about. He's a really good defensive player already, and the offense is going to be a little bit of a question mark, I think, moving forward to Kentucky. I think that you're going to be drafting him more on profile than you are what he's going to do at Kentucky this year. And then
right.
Okafor is the crowning jewel, in my opinion. He is the most complete post player offensively that I think I've ever scouted. I wasn't around for the Tim Duncan days, but Okafor
right.
reminds me of just the way that you watched Cousins with his power, but he has better footwork than Cousins did. Just the way he uses his shoulders and hips to kind of throw defenders off balance. Without fouling, though, on the offensive end, he does use the elbow a little bit sometimes to hook, but he mostly does it just with his shoulders and hips, just with his quick turns. And he has the touch from – I think he's going to have the touch from up to 15 feet in the next couple of years. He's just a really incredible offensive player. The defensive questions are valid. I get it. But he's still a 6'11 guy with a 7'5 wingspan. I think you can figure out a way to make that work.
Right. His post game reminds me a little bit of Zach Randolph. I don't know if that's – I almost see that, like, obviously he's a little bit bigger than Randolph, but mm-hmm. to me, I see the footwork, and I think Randolph's footwork is very good. I see that in Okafor. I'm young too. I wasn't old enough to see Tim Duncan. My biggest question mark with Okafor, can he step out to 15 to 18 feet like Duncan does and have that dual threat of being an inside-out big, outside-in big, where he can go, you know, and kind of do both. But I agree. I mean, I wouldn't mind if the Knicks lost every single game the rest of the year if it meant having a 6% higher chance of getting Okafor. That's how good I think he is. And the wingspan to me is what, when I've been defending why I would take him, his wingspan to me shows that he can be he can form into a good defensive player. I mean, if he was 6'11" with a, you know, with a 7-foot wingspan, I'd say, you know, maybe he'll be decent defensively. But a 7'5" wingspan, you can accidentally block a few shots a game. I mean, it's, you know, I just think he's that good offensively, where he's the real deal.
Yeah, and here's the other thing with him too. He's at like 275 pounds or 270 pounds right now. He got into a lot better shape coming into this year too, so it wouldn't really surprise me if he was back up around like 280-ish in that area at this point. So I think a lot of what you're seeing from him now could even be like just his body not necessarily breaking down, but like kind of slowing down a little bit. I've talked to a lot of bigger guys who have tried to get into like quote-unquote the best shape of your lives before you go to the draft, or like the season before you go to your draft. And, you know, a lot of them say, like, sometimes it's hard to keep that weight off. You would think during the season, like, you would be able to keep it off, but it's actually not as easy as it would sound for these guys, just because you don't necessarily want to overwork yourself in the off days. So unless you're, like, really, really unless your cardio is just exceptional, you don't want to wear yourself out in these off days for games, and that can lead to you ending up just putting on a little bit more weight. I would say that Okafor looks a little bit heavier right now than he did coming into the season.
I agree
with
that.
His feet are moving a little bit slower, it looks like to me, and that's where the defensive questions are coming from. But I think that once you get him into an NBA nutritional system and an NBA workout plan, his body's going to tone right up, and he's going to be in great shape.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think too, the college lifestyle is so much different than even top D1 college lifestyle is still so much different than the NBA. I mean, the grind, the 82 games, it's just a totally different game, and it's really tough to get a sense of whose body translates to what. I know injuries are a huge deal. My biggest question, Moutier not playing in the NCAA this year, obviously, you know, the grades and being eligible and whatnot. Coming from China, or going to China, now coming back for the NBA draft, supposedly. We saw Jeremy Tyler do that. Some others have done that before, jumping right to international basketball. What are your thoughts on that? And your thoughts on Moutier as a person and as a leader, as opposed to a basketball player?
I think that that's all going to be fine, the leadership skills, whatever. I don't really buy a whole lot into that at this stage, just because he's an 18-year-old kid. Like, who knows what's going on with him. Like, it seems like it was more the grades with him, and he was at that goofy Prime Prep Institute in Texas that was, you know, not the most upstanding of institutions. So, I don't think that I don't think that there's anything that you could like cast aspersions on him as far as like his mind or anything. I mean, you watch him play; he's clearly really smart. The way he moves his feet in the pick and roll, the way that he, like I said, he just gets defenders on his back and can kind of make them do what he wants. It's like he has his defenders on a string once he turns that corner in the pick and roll. Like, it's clear that he's a really, really sharp kid who has worked a lot on his craft. It's like that's the only way you can get that kind of footwork at that point. So I think that he's fine as far as that. I think he was just put into a bad situation where he ended up having to go to China and made a little bit of money. And I think that he'll be back over, and I think he'll be fine once he gets over here. It might hurt his draft stock a little bit, just because D'Angelo Russell, like I said, he's coming up with a bullet at this point. Like, it's really incredible to watch him if he keeps putting in performances like he did last week. I don't see any way that he doesn't become the first guard taken. But then again, it's going to be tough for him to do that, because it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, to replicate performances like that on a game-to-game basis for an 18-year-old. So I think that Moutier is still going to be fine. I think that he'll be an excellent prospect going forward. I like him a lot. That's why I still have him third on my board. If the Knicks end up falling to third, I don't think that they should have any problems taking him.
Okay. Now, talking about the Knicks, the triangle offense, Phil is clearly, you know, kind of committed to the triangle and committed to players that can play the triangle. So out of these top couple guys that we've been talking a little bit about, do you see, a passing big that, you know, that's going to fall in this top five, or a great shooting guard, a great shooting point guard that's going to, you know, be able to initiate the offense and hit corner threes like Steve Kerr and John Paxton did in the Bulls heydays. Mm-hmm. Do you see a triangle fit in this top five?
Well, both Okafor and Towns are really good passers. Okafor a little bit more so. Okafor is a terrific passer. He makes that cross-court pass once he gets the ball in the post, as well as any freshman that I've ever seen. He knows exactly where the double's coming from and can either hit that little dump off the rim if it's coming from the backside, or he can get it, like I said, cross-court all the way to the three-pointer if it's coming from the far side of the court. So I think that Okafor is a very good fit in the triangle specifically. Towns is also a good passer. I think that he'll continue to develop that going forward, and he'll be fine. And then, like you said, as far as the shooting, D'Angelo Russell is an excellent shooting point guard. But more than that, I think you just need a lead guard, and Russell fits that more than anything. You can find the shooters like the Kerrs and the Paxtons later on. Like, you can find those in free agencies, like your Anthony Moros or something like
right.
that. But you need to get the lead guard that can really handle the ball. I think that Russell's that. I think that Moutier would be that. And I think that Okafor would also fit in the triangle. There's a lot of really good fits in the triangle this year for the
yeah.
Knicks. I don't know to worry about that part.
Yeah, the one thing that's impressed me about Russell so far is his shooting percentage and his assist to turnover ratio. I mean, I think I don't remember which game it was last week, but I don't think he recorded a turnover. And I think he recorded his first turnover in a 2-game span, like into the third quarter of the second game. I mean, for a freshman guard, that's, you know, that's almost unheard of. I mean, you know, normally they make those freshman mistakes, and he seems like he just has a way when he has the ball of controlling the game. And having that 3-point shot that he's, I believe, the last number I saw, maybe 48% he's shooting from three, which is, you know, ridiculous. So I've been very impressed with him, obviously, more over the last, you know, couple weeks, the 30-point games, the 22-10 game I think he had, you know, the other on Sunday, yeah. So I've just really been impressed with Russell. I think he's, you know, he's definitely stood out to me.
Yeah, his offensive awareness is incredible. Have you seen the long backdoor skip passes where he puts three ball type English
yeah.
on the ball? Yeah, it's unbelievable. Just the way that he controls the game, the way that he just always seems to be poised, confident in his decisions. And another thing is, you pretty much have to play up on him because that 3-point shot just has such a quick release.
Oh,
it's just really impressive with how quickly he can get that ball up from A to B and towards the rim. He's one of the better offensive guards that I've scouted in a while. I really, really like him. The question with him is going to be more athletically and just strength-wise.
Right.
He can
sure.
handle the rigors of the NBA. I mean, he's 18. I think that he'll put on that strength, and I think that he'll be fine just watching his watching his game, watching his intelligence. I think that he is a clear top five prospect in my mind, which is really a surprise for a kid that wasn't even a top 10 freshman coming
right.
into the year.
Right.
So
yeah, no,
yeah,
that's,
I'm pretty sold on it.
So joining me on the Knicks at Night show right now, Sam Vecenie, writer for CBS Sports College Basketball, covers all things NBA draft, college basketball, and the NBA. Sam, we have something we like to do on the show. It's called our Fast Five. It's five quick questions, one-word answers. You ready to give it a shot?
I will try, yeah.
Okay. There's some
Knicks
stuff going on.
You'll find with me that one thing with me is that it's difficult for me to give one-word answers on things.
You wouldn't be the only writer that I've had on that says that. So that's definitely a pretty common comment. But we'll give it a shot. So the
yep.
top overall pick in the 2015 NBA draft will be?
Okafor.
Carmelo Anthony should shut it down and get surgery at some point this season soon.
Yes.
okay, now this is going to require five words. So I'm going to give a name, and then you give me someone who you see similar to that in the NBA now.
Okay, this will be fun.
Towns.
Towns, LaMarcus Aldridge with some asterisks.
Okay. D'Angelo Russell.
Darren Williams.
Okay. Okafor.
Not really a comparison, I don't think.
Okay. Moutier.
Don't really know that there's comparison for him either because he's so big.
Okay. So taking Okafor out of this, if the Knicks get the second overall draft pick, who would you take?
Towns.
Okay. And give me one good reason why you'd still go to a Knicks basketball game.
Langston Galloway.
Okay. Okay.
He's at least a one story.
He is.
I'm not necessarily saying he's an NBA player. I don't even think I'm convinced of that. I think he's kind of a lesser Jordan Crawford, but it's a fun story at the very least, and it'll be fun to see where it goes.
Okay. I actually like that answer. That's a good answer. Well, Sam, I really appreciate you joining me tonight, giving me about 25 minutes of your time. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the college basketball season, and hopefully we can get you on again before the draft.
Yep, anytime, Frank. Have a good night.
All right, thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
See ya.
Take care. That was Sam right here on the Knicks at Night Show. He is from CBS Sports, covers college basketball. Very, very cool guy. Appreciate him coming on for an extended period of time there. So we have joining me on the line right now a name most Knicks fans read every day. If you don't, you probably should. Long friend of the show, Mr. Mark Berman. How you doing tonight, Mark?
Hey, doing great, Frank. Thanks for having me on again.
Sure. Always love having you on. We're a little short staffed tonight. Our call screener's out. Tom is out. So it's just me talking some Knicks basketball. We just got a chance to talk to Sam Verini from CBS Sports. He is a college basketball expert, and I figured this is basically what it's come to this season. Now I'm watching college basketball more than ever, trying to see who that next guy can be, and I understand that you were in the building Sunday to watch probably the number one overall pick in Jahlil Okafor. What did you think of him?
Yeah, he's an offensive dynamo for 19 years old. You know, he was a little quiet until they needed him to step up in the final minutes, and then he dominated. And he still made a couple of block shots late, a couple of big rebounds, a couple of good contests at the rim. But I've seen him. I think this is the third game I've seen him. And no question offensively he's going to step in right away and help an NBA team immensely next season. It is the defense but he's 19, and he'll grow into that role. And he's not Anthony Davis coming out, but who is? And he's a better offensive player than Davis, but not nearly the rebounder or the shot blocker or the interior defender. So, but he's definitely the number one pick. And, you know, whether the Knicks are the number one lottery seed or the number two lottery seed or number three lottery seed, they have a shot. And if not, you know, they have that Chinese Basketball Association point guard, if I can pronounce his name, Moutier, yeah. And he went out there to China to play and looking great. But the Knicks need a center, and that's why I would hope they would go with Towns of Kentucky. But you're right, I'm starting to watch some college basketball. You know, if the Knicks do have the number one seed, you know, people talk about the 25% chance of getting the number one pick, but also getting the number one seed, also they can't fall below four, and that's important.
It's the number one thing,
because it could be a four-man draft. Right now people are talking about the top three of Towns, Moudaye, and of course Okafor, but there's definitely others, and To get the number one pick in the draft, though, would be the kind of blessing that Phil Jackson needs right now to turn the franchise around.
Oh yeah, and I get into this argument all the time. Oh, it's not a you know, a sealed deal. You know, yeah, it's only a 25% chance. And I said, I understand the 25% chance. The thing that really matters is the top four guarantee. And regardless of whether it's a 2-person draft or a 10-person draft, having a top four pick in a lottery type system it's almost a guarantee. I mean, it is a guarantee that you're going to get one of those top four picks, and that to me is the important factor. They need as high a pick as they can get, and if there's any guarantee, I hope that they can get that guarantee. And I believe if you have the second worst record, you're guaranteed a top five. Am I right on that?
Yeah, you can only fold down three, so you could fold down a five. And listen, we can talk about some fans who are rooting for them to lose. Now, I don't go that far. I think it's their best interest to still play competitively and watch Fisher grow as a coach.
Sure.
And I think that, and it's important, I think, for the triangle to look good to these prospective free agents also, which is why these final 37 games matter also. And I wrote that in a column today. I think Fisher's coaching better since the trade. I think he's more comfortable with the roster. Downingbad was just a disaster in the locker room on the court. And it was obviously addition by subtraction. Smith was hurt, and walking on eggshells mentality is something that now Fisher doesn't have to worry about. I think JR spread some negativity in that locker room about the triangle and about the new system, as did Hardaway. But I think Hardaway now is better off without Shumpert around and without JR around and without Downbear around. I think he's played better and has a better attitude.
Sure. And, I think the one thing that people get confused is that, the Knicks have, the second or third worst record in the NBA right now. But that doesn't mean that you can't lose and learn at the same time. And I think it's especially important for Fisher, and I've talked about this too. It's important for him to understand how to coach in the NBA. He played for such a long time, and he understood what it was like to be a leader on the floor. And now he has to kind of do it a different way, and he has to learn a different way. And I think Phil Jackson is confident that Fisher, with some time, can learn how to do this. I think he's a good motivator, on the court, that he thinks it can be translated to off the court as a coach. And I think this season will help him. It's still tough to say what he'll end up being. The Knicks lost a ton of close games that I guess you can kind of put on the star player and the coach. But I think he has done a better job recently. I think his substitution still confused me a little bit. I wanted to ask you about that. Do you see any rhyme or reason with the lineups, with the players that, Fisher's trotting out there? We see guys signed on 10-day contracts playing over second-round draft picks, playing over, guys like Pablo. I understand he may not be here next year, but what is your take on how and who the Knicks have played recently?
Yeah, well, I mean, recently it's more about development, and I'm not going to kill him for some of the moves he's made, except the Cleanthony early situation is a little puzzling to me. I know he sprained his ankle last week, but he was a DNP in Charlotte, and I was very surprised by that. He had only played 3 minutes the game before that upon his return, and didn't shoot, didn't have a rebound. His box score was all zeros. So he may still be not 100%, but going back to the London game, I know he wanted to see the 10-day guys, but to have a DNP and not – actually, he didn't dress that night. It was one of the few nights they had enough bodies. They had to deactivate one player, and they deactivated Cleanthony. And I saw him after the game, and he looked pretty down. And I thought that was when you're in London, I mean, he's a rookie who you're trying to develop. It would have been a very nice experience for him to play in that game. And I think it was instead a negative experience for him. So I'm a little puzzled about the usage right now of Cleanthony, because this is a guy who they were so high on when they drafted him, thought he was a pick who should have been in the 20s. But, listen, early on the season, I thought Fisher made a mistake, played way too many players, couldn't find a rotation, couldn't find a starting lineup, kept changing, overcoached, in my opinion. And, you know, once the fire sale occurred with Phil, it didn't really matter anymore. Then it was just about developing guys. But when they were still trying to make the playoffs in November and December, I thought that Fisher did a poor job, and I think he learned from it. And, you know, his remark the other day, it was, I think, Friday before the Orlando game, really was revealing when he was asked, what's the biggest surprise as a head coach? And he says, having to motivate these guys to play hard every night. And I thought that's something a coach should know going in. That's one in the NBA especially, that is the number one job requirement, more than X's and O's, is getting these guys motivated for 82 games with the crazy amount of travel they do, the crazy amount of back-to-backs. I mean, the NBA schedule maker, Silver's got to change the schedule. It's clear that these, you know, veteran players cannot take the grind, and they're taking nights off, and it's not fair to the fans. But anyway, regarding Fisher's remark, I think he's learned that you can't take anything for granted with these players. They have to be motivated every night because it's a very long season and a tough grind.
Oh, sure. And I think the one thing about, you know, the players being motivated throughout the 82-game season, Fisher's never really had to deal with a team like this Knicks team right now. He's never really been on a rebuilding, right, you know, team. He's been on championship teams more times than not. And he's been on contenders with guys that are, you know, Durant, Kobe, Shaq. Like, he's been with players. I feel like it's a little bit different for him now because he's trying to motivate when winning isn't the ultimate motivation. I think it's difficult to sell a guy on playing hard every night when you've got 7 wins, you know, and you're, you know, 40 something games into the season. I think that's where his learning curve comes in. There's no doubt in my mind that when this team turns it around, hopefully next year, the year after, he'll be able to motivate guys when they're winning. And I think, you know, again, winning solves everything. So, Mark, just wanted to get your thoughts. Langston Galloway signed for the rest of the year and a partially guaranteed contract for next year. Is that the full what you've been hearing so far? Is next year partially guaranteed, fully guaranteed? What have you heard with that?
Yeah, well, it's not fully guaranteed. Yeah, we have some more details. I don't know if it's on the website yet for the Post, but it's a very complicated deal. First of all, we reported, you know, Knicks were playing hardball. They didn't want to give any
right
kind of guarantee for next year. They wanted to sign him for the rest of this year with a non-guaranteed contract for next year, which meant they got to control him, but against Galloway, because then he couldn't choose his spot. But they compromised. So, you know, some of the details, if they don't waive him by July 1st, he gets, you know, close to $300,000 for the 15-16 season. If he is still not waived by the start of training camp, you know, he's guaranteed to make more than half of that minimum $845,000. So he got some, and listen, unless something weird happens, he's going to be in summer league again, and he's going to be in training camp. Whether they are able to build a roster where Langston doesn't make the team, I'd be a little surprised. I think even if he does great in free agency, I think the 12, 13, 14, and 15, I mean, Langston should be able to get there. I've been very impressed with him. But, again, it was surprising about the hardball nature of these negotiations. It came out of nowhere. I figured it was just going to be a routine thing to sign him for the rest of the year. But the agent really wanted, you know, something for next season, and he got something.
Good. Yeah, no, I liked what I've seen from Langston Galloway. Obviously, he hit that big shot in the corner. Was that Saturday or sometime last week? Last Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah, so he's shown a little bit of what he can do. I think, you know, he's one of those in-between guards. He doesn't really have a position. You know, he's 6'2". I wish he was 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", you know, a bigger combo guard, but it is what it is. He's shown that he has some athleticism.
Well,
I will say
for 6'2", he's a pretty damn good rebounder. He's averaging 4 rebounds a game. He's averaging more rebounds than Tim Hardaway, who's a lot taller and more athletic. But for his size, he gets the most out of his ability, that's for sure.
Sure, yeah, no, absolutely. I really do like him. And so now talk about some other additions the Knicks have made. Lance Thomas and Lou Amundsen, two guys that they've signed to 10-day contracts. Their 10-day contracts are going to be up soon or, you know, within the next couple of days or so. What do you see the Knicks doing with them? Have you been impressed with them? What do you think the Knicks are going to do going forward with them?
Yeah, it's a great question. The 10 days expire, I think, this weekend. And both have been very productive, and Fisher loves them. And they're adding grit and smarts, and they understand the triangle a lot more than JR did after JR was with it for 3 months. So, you know, they bring a commitment, you know, they bring a work ethic. And, you know, these are the type of players that Fisher wants to coach. Self-motivated guys, smart guys, guys with work ethics, and whether they keep both of them, I'm not sure. It depends what else they have going on. I think they will try to keep both of them, especially it doesn't look like I tweeted about that Jermichael Green of San Antonio. He was the superstar in the D-League, power forward, and the Spurs did not re-sign him. And he's a free agent again, but there's at least three teams that seem to be ahead of the Knicks lobbying for his services. The Knicks don't have a roster spot right this moment. But listen, the Knicks still have a lot of moves they could make in terms of, especially after the trading deadline, waiving Andrea Bargnani. And I really think they're going to trade Pablo and try to get an asset, whether a trade exception or a draft pick. I think they want to play Langston, and they, you know, want to see Calderon get better. I mean, pie in the sky, they could trade him and open up more cap space, but Phil is a little torn because this was his big investment. This was his big addition in the offseason. But, Lance and Lou, I think they have a good chance of signing for the rest of the season, but it's not set in stone. I think Lance Thomas definitely comes back. Lou is 32 years old. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, and the strange thing to me is that the Knicks have Quincy Acey, who's on the bench, who, in my opinion, played pretty well before all these 10-day contracts were signed, and he reminds me a lot of what Lou Amundsen brings to the table, that grit, that toughness, rebounding, defense, being an energy guy. And to me, the Knicks have that in Quincy Acey. So I don't really think you need two of those guys on the same team. And since AC is signed for the rest of the year, that wouldn't surprise me if they let Amundsen go. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Do you kind of see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. The qualities you mentioned, a lot of grit, a lot of hustle, lunch pail player, not the smartest player in the world.
Right.
And I think he's been hurt by his injury. His wrist has been an issue all season. And I think he got used to that losing mentality, which Lou came in with a clean slate. And I think, you know, Quincy has had trouble actually getting in the lineup since Lou and Lance came aboard. But I see what you're saying. Younger player. Do they want to develop him? I think so. I'm not 100% sold yet on whether they want to bring him back. I think he's a little erratic. He definitely has a lot of grit and is, as you said, very young, not 32 years old like Lou Amundsen. So, Lou is taking away time from Quincy and a little bit maybe from Clay Anthony. So, yeah, the Lou situation, it's going to be interesting. I know Fisher would love to keep him, but I wonder what Jackson and Mills are thinking, because when they made the three-team trade, Lou was not going to be on the team. I mean, they were going to waive him, and that was it. Lance, they wanted, but then they, like, had a change of heart. They flip-flopped on Lance a couple of times. But Lou was a surprise that they actually retained him.
Right, yeah. No, I was really surprised, too, because he's a journeyman. He's been on 10 or so NBA teams. I mean, you think he's a guy, you know, to me, you wouldn't see him having a role. I think he started a few games for the Knicks, so... Clearly, you know, Fisher likes him and he likes what he brings to the table. I just can't see them keeping him, especially with, you know, some of these other D-League guys out there that we could bring in to possibly get a look at. So now, talking a little bit more about minutes. Melo and Amari have had some strange minutes distributed to them. Especially Amari, you know, he's playing one night, he's not playing another night. Melo, clearly not 100%. Obviously, most fans think, okay, you know, because the All-Star game's in New York City, Melo's going to play in the All-Star game, then go for surgery. Your take on those two players?
Yeah, I think Fisher's really down right now on Amari. Since he came back from his 9-game sabbatical, he has not been up to speed. He doesn't seem to be moving nearly as well or have any rhythm on offense. And the other night in Charlotte, he was a disaster. I know he got hurt with his sprained ankle and claimed his wrist was bothering him also. But I think I don't think Fisher sees the point anymore in playing Amare if he has some younger, more exuberant power forwards and guys to put in. So I just wonder if they're keeping him around to see if he could fit into some kind of deadline trade. But I think his minutes, Fisher has said, if he's playing well, I'll play him. But if I see he's not performing well in the first half, I'm going to cut his minutes down. Carmelo, who knows? I mean, if the Knicks are winning, he'll probably stick around to March. If they're like losing and losing, he'll probably shut it down. He's got an injury that doesn't get worse structurally. And that's why they're letting him play. It's all about Carmelo's mentality more than his knee, to be honest. If he thinks he's showing leadership and helping the club and helping the franchise by playing into March, he'll probably play into March. If he thinks it's a waste of time, then he may shut it down after the All-Star break. But if I had a bet right now, I think he gets into March and then, you know, calls it, shuts it down. And he could have the surgery after the season. It's not a big rehab. I mean, I think it's a pretty routine knee stuff. But it would be nice. You know, I think Carmelo wants to play basketball. I mean, one thing about Carmelo, he loves basketball. You know, I can't say the same thing if Amari feels that way. But Carmelo loves to play, and I think he's going to play as long as he can.
Okay. Yeah. No, I agree with that, and I think that's good. I think the more he does play, the more respect that Knicks fans will give him, which he deserves. And so now we talked a little bit about Jose Calderon. Do you think, and obviously, you know, you said that that's kind of Phil's deal, and he made that trade, you know, sending Tyson Chandler away and bringing back Calderon and his contract. Do you think that a deal for Calderon is going to be made? Do you think, you know, attaching a young asset, maybe a Tim Hardaway Jr. with Calderon, can get that money away so that, you know, they can kind of start fresh and have an extra $9 million in cap space to spend over the summer?
I don't think so. I'm not sure a team is going to want to take on his contract. I think if he had just one more year left on his deal, I think there would be a much better chance. But a lot of teams want to have cap room in 2016 also.
Right.
Because of, you know, first of all, the cap's going to go up. And there's, you know, it's going to be a nice 2016 class headed by Durant. But, you know, Calderon has to play a lot better in the next couple of weeks for anyone to want to trade for him at the deadline. And he has played a little better. His shot is starting to find itself from the three-point range. He hit the huge shot against New Orleans that won that game. So, I mean, if he plays better, I think he'll have some trade value. I still think the contract is going to be prohibitive. And cap space is just cap space. I mean, there's a lot of nice free agents, but that doesn't mean they're going to come to New York.
True.
You know, maybe Phil thinks that, you know, if he looks better, then we should hold on to him. And there are some circumstances that caused his poor play and missing the first 13 games and not really getting comfortable with the triangle and having practice time with the triangle. Not only did he miss the first 13 games, but he missed the final couple of weeks of training camp. So, you know, there may be factors that Phil believes will lead Jose to a much better season next year. If I had a bet, I'd say that they're unable to trade him. But I think, yeah, there's part of the franchise that would love to have another $7 million of cap space for 15 and 16. But it's just Calderon has to look better. He's 34 years old. Is he on the decline? I think a lot of GMs think he may just be.
Sure, and I think you know, hindsight, obviously a lot of fans were happy to get Felton out, you know, and bring someone like Calderon in, who's a prototypical point guard for this team. I think one thing that would be interesting to watch, if the Knicks do end up with, you know, the third, fourth pick, they bring in a guy like Russell or Moutier, you know, now all of a sudden there's, you know, Jose Calderon. Do you need him? Do you then try and move him? Or
yeah.
Do you keep him as a backup, but, you know, a pretty expensive backup? I think a lot of those things will go into the decision-making process for this team. So, Mark, we have something on the show called the Fast Five. You ready to give it a shot? Do you remember the rules and how it works?
Yeah, I think we've done it before, but just refresh me.
Sure. Well, there's five quick questions, one-word answers.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. If so, let's see. In the 2015 NBA draft, if the Knicks select second, who would you take? So taking
Towns.
Four out. Towns.
Yeah,
okay.
Carl Towns.
Carmelo Anthony should shut it down at some point and get healthy soon. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Jose Calderon, Amari Stoudemire, Andrea Bargnani. Which of these players will be on the Knicks after the trade deadline?
Calderon. That's all.
Okay. Hold on. The fourth question, I apologize. It doesn't make sense anymore. We already talked about it. But all right, so give me one good reason why I should still go to Knick games.
Just to see the youth, the young players, and Fisher try to figure out how to coach.
Okay. And I'll throw in a fifth question here. The Knicks will have over under 15 wins this year.
Over.
Okay. So that means they play a little
much.
Bit better. Not by much. Well, I hope not, because you know, I want that guaranteed top four. Well, Mark,
so
I really appreciate
those,
you.
Lose more for Okafor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, lose for who? Hashtag lose for who? Yeah, exactly. Well, Mark, we really appreciate you joining us tonight, giving us some time talking Knicks basketball. You know, like always, really do appreciate it, and we hope we can talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Rick. Yeah, just that question about after the trade deadline. I think Andrea and Amari won't be traded, but after the trade deadline, probably
yeah.
be waived. Yeah, that's one of my predictions.
I agree with that. I don't think there's any way that they could bring back enough salary to make those deals work where it's still
in the Knicks'
favor.
Especially Amari. I mean, Andrea, maybe if there's some complicated deal where they could use their trade exceptions and he's part of the mathematics. But $22 million of Stoudemire's contract is just seems implausible.
Oh, yeah. So. Unless they're bringing back, you know, someone they want to sign, you know, for next year. You know, but I can't see any team doing that. You know.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard.
Well, Mark, appreciate it. Hope all is well. Keep doing good things at the Post. Enjoy reading it every day, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Frank. Good luck with the show. You do a great job.
Thanks.
Take care,
Mark. That was Mark Berman of the New York Post right here on the Knicks at Night Show, presented by Knicks Nation and Knicks Follow Train. So we're going to keep it right at an hour for this evening. Tom and Tyler both couldn't be with me tonight, but I hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Knicks at Night Show, presented by Knicks Nation and Knicks Follow Train. This podcast will be available for download immediately following tonight's show on Stitcher and iTunes. Follow all of us at Frank Nutt, at Tom Baffa on Twitter for your latest news regarding our upcoming shows. And, you know, hopefully we'll be back next week. I don't know what the schedule looks like as far as the Knicks are concerned, but we will be back at some point. And definitely check out Sean Aquinu, Gregory Armstrong, and Peter Azzori's podcast. They have been, you know, going kind of off and on for a while, but check out the other Knicks at Night Show, Knick Fans Drinking Beer. You check that out. That's on Stitcher and iTunes as well. And follow those guys on Twitter. They've, you know, great guys to have a conversation with, talk Knicks basketball. I've never met a more passionate group of fans in my life, and they're just overall good guys. So definitely give them a listen, give them a follow. So I am Frank Nutt, signing off for the Knicks at Night Show, presented by Knicks Nation and Knicks Follow Train. Have a good evening, and go Knicks.